I agreed to do this, then, is to try to put together a program for you which would bring together some voices from the Seattle theatrical community which are not limited to a kind of Lort A or Lort B mentality. And I don't use that pejorative when I work for a Lort B theater as a consultant. I use that as a descriptive kind of phrase. And so I set out to bring together some folks who work on the fringe, who work not necessarily in the mainstream theater, to see if we could create a program whereby you could come and have some resource people to talk to in terms of asking questions, sharing their experiences, describing how one might go about working with a fringe theater, describing what the difficulties are of working on the fringe in Seattle economically, artistically, and in a variety of other ways. Because of the pressures of spring and time, and one theater that just went out of business, my list of fringe people evaporated continually on me over the spring until I was left to the goodness of his heart and the kindness of his expression, Mr. Kazan. John has agreed to come here and kind of be a panel of one for you. So our plan really is to let John talk to you a little bit about what he does in Seattle, and I hope that in the course of that, it may stimulate some questions and ideas that you may want to ask him about. I have one kind of further qualifier before I go on, and that is to say that I've never met John before, so I cannot very well introduce him. So what I'm going to ask John to do, with your good graces, I'm going to ask John to kind of tell you a little bit about himself by way of introduction, and then talk a little bit about what the alternative scene theater is in Seattle, and then see what questions that you have. Before we do that, however, Cynthia has a couple of announcements.
There is one more colloquium, final colloquium next week, and it is going to be here again. And what we're going to do is, Betty is going to talk to people about plans for next year, plays, the plans that we do have made already. And she'll let you know which ones we don't have made yet. And we're going to continue an Oscar discussion. It seems that people have been benefiting from those discussions, the faculty as well as the students. So we will meet here for that. I know some people are leaving town before Friday next week. If you are not going to be able to be at the final colloquium, please pick up a questionnaire that we need you to fill out. There's some written work we need you to fill out for credit. And it will be in my mailbox. So people can pick that up. It'll be Monday afternoon in my mailbox. You can pick it up there and return it to my mailbox. Diana is teaching her tap class this summer, starting June 11th, Tuesdays and Thursday nights at 7:30. It's going to be a 6-week class. It's a good deal at $15. And anybody who has not taken Diana's tap classes, they're great. So you just show up at 7:30 on June 11th at Hutchinson, and it'll be posted on the board which room it's going to be in. There are free tickets available for Harry Condolian's Play Yourself at Seattle Rep this weekend. It's Friday and Saturday night at 7:30, Sunday at 1:30 and 6:30. And if you're interested in these free tickets, you can sign up with Diana in the drama office and pick up your tickets 15 minutes before the show starts. Paul.
Ghost of Scattered Thoughts, a dance drama type of show, is in Hutchinson 218, Monday at 7:30 and Tuesday at 6:30. And please come.
Mark has an announcement.
Yeah, on Tuesday and Thursday at 4 o'clock down in Bryant's, they're going to be presentations of several new plays, one by E.J. Saperstein. I forget which day his is, Thursday. And then we have one by Ken Thompson, which is getting an extended reading this time. It's an extended jello metaphor, but some of you might have seen. It's very funny as well. And then possibly a play by Tina Redd. That'll be on Tuesday. So if you could watch the boards and come and see them. You'll get to see some new work, and everybody's comments would really be appreciated since they're works in progress. So come on down.
Stephen?
4 o'clock.
I just had a question about next week, Cindy. Mm-hmm. Will there be time to discuss colloquium for next year, too?
We're, in the written work that we're going to give you to do, we are asking for people's suggestions about colloquium and what you'd like to see in colloquiums for next year, yes.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, Mitch?
And Kevin Frith is directing Picnic down in Bryant's next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 8 o'clock.
Okay. Watch the director.
Anybody else have any announcements? Eric, no? Okay. John?
Can I ask a question to that? Just kind of what I'm talking to you. How many people in here have worked professionally or want to work professionally when they get out? I mean, they're, you know, when they have to get a job in the real world, it's in the professional field. Right. And how many actors we got in here? Right? And how many playwrights we got in here? And how many designers we have in here? And people from the technical side of things? Technical director? Okay. Did I miss anybody?
Directors.
I got a thing against directors. I'll tell you about that. Directors. Great. A little about myself. I am 38. I came to the theater, went after professionally very kind of late in life at 28. I taught secondary school when I got out of college, when I got out of college, it was at that time that I wanted to be back in starting college because I found what I was interested in, which was theater, drama, and I thought I was going to be a teacher in dramatic literature. So I worked as a teacher in high school for 5 years and saved money so I could go back to school. While I did that, I started, even though I went to school at NYU in New York, when I was in college, I really didn't go to the theater much until my senior year. And then the following 5 years when I was teaching and getting ready to go back to school, I started going to the theater in New York as much as possible. And I just got attracted. This was in late 60s, early 70s. And so I got attracted to the off-Broadway scene. Financially, that's why I went there, because I could see a lot of things at a cheap price. And then I also liked the kind of material that was there, and it was more alternative theater. I did not go regularly to Broadway shows. I did not go regularly too often to like the Manhattan Theater Club or even Circle Rep. So I did that, so a lot of performance work, went back to school, really thought I was still going to get a master's in dramatic literature and then teach. Went to an okay school and had an opportunity to do performance work. And since with a literary background, I kind of went towards directing. I thought, well, I'll be a director. Did directing work, got out of college, taught for a year, and said, oh, the hell with this. I really want to try and make it a profession in the theater. And I did that when I was 29. And then for 3 years, I hooked up right away with the Williamstown Theater Festival in Massachusetts, which is really a three-month summer place that has like a $2 million budget. Big main stage. Wife Danner goes there, Maria Tucci goes there, Frank Magella goes there. In addition to that, Williamstown has a number of smaller satellite companies all around. One of them was called the Second Company, which was a great thing, which is no longer there. And it was a non-equity company for young professionals, who people like yourself who are just getting out of school, or young people in their 20s who were out of school and looking for work in New York and hadn't gotten their equity card yet. Performers. Directors and designers. Small company of 15 to 20 people got together. You did everything. When you got together, you had to make the stage out of an all-purpose room. And we did 5 shows in rotating repertory. They were contemporary plays. We'd do 2 classical pieces, but turn them on their head. They'd be conceptual, contemporary approaches. And so the small company of people did this, and I grew up with this company. I was the production stage manager my first year, then I became the company manager my second year, then I became the artistic director my third year. Yeah, I eventually ended up from working 3 months out of the year in the first year, and the next following 2 seasons I worked 9 months out of the year, and I was in New York in the off season with the New York office doing other administrative things. So I learned a lot about producerial things, and quite frankly, the artistic director of Williamstown, he said, yeah, John, he said, this is Greek. He goes, yeah, you can't do that. You have to learn how to produce. So next year you're the manager, you learn how to produce, and then you can be the director the following year. So he was really a mentor for me, and I learned both directorial artistic work and also producerial work, how to run a theater. So when I came out of there, and while I was there, I got an opportunity to meet a lot of directors who were farther ahead in the second stage of their careers professionally. They had gotten 10 guest directing jobs around the country, and they were making a bare bones living. The grimness of it then, and it's still not much different now, as the freelance directing route. You know, there are kind of two ways to go for a director. You can go the freelance directing route, or you can look to hook yourself up with an institution. And David Rotenberg, who had graduated from Yale, a very talented director. He had been out of Yale for 3 years, and he had just gotten his first year in which he made his living off directing. He did like 12 shows all over the country. He made $11,000. And that really hasn't changed too much. It's very difficult. So I saw that, and I said, Jesus, even if I could get a career as a freelance director, no way am I interested in bouncing around. So I'm going to go towards producerial work, being a director with a theater, maybe a dramaturg, maybe a literary manager, work my way in that way. Hopefully I'll run my own theater someday. Left Williamstown, it was time to leave. My wife's an actress. We heard Seattle's a great theater town. We were going to go back to New York. Someone was holding our apartment. We didn't want to go back. We were in Santa Barbara. We invested. She came up to Seattle, auditioned around. Burke Walker had seen Tall Connections. Burke Walker had seen her in a showcase at Playwrights Horizons of a new play which we had done at Williamstown. She was there with me my last year at the second company. He saw her, she sent him his resume, he said, oh, I remember you, we're doing Festival and Friends, and we need a lot of non-equity actors. Great, cast her. We thought we'd be in Seattle for 8 weeks, then she got more work. I was unemployed for 5 months, volunteering my time all over the place. Something about Seattle, the pace of things is much slower than in New York in terms of contacts and getting work. What I found in going around to the various theaters, and I think I volunteered my time, first I volunteered my time at Seattle Rep, then I volunteered my time at the group, then I volunteered my time at the Pioneer Square Theater, then I kept writing Burke Walker, and then finally I got a little work there. And then after 5 months of unemployment, this conservatory theater company, which is this small theater on Capitol Hill, which was kind of artistically and financially bankrupt and wasn't this big, it was a dump. And the board had been running the theater. No one applied for the job really in the community because it's like a curse, you know, they really didn't. So there wasn't much competition. I applied and in the interview they had this deficit and everything, the place looked like a dump, it was horrible. But they told me we owned the facility, the nonprofit organization owns the building and the property. I just come from New York, I sat on the curb and I looked at this $600,000, you know, evaluated property and I said, this is mine. So I went after it and I got it. At the same time that happened, I had been applying for 3 years running. For a National Endowment for the Arts Director Fellowship, which is a great thing for young directors in which it's a fellowship for a full year with a theater and they pay you, you know, 13, now it's like $15,000 or 14, and that time it's 11. So Burke Walker, after applying him and writing him and sending him proposals and everything else, he invites me into his office one day. I'm going on too long about this. And he says
to me, this is wild.
I hadn't seen him in months. And he goes, John, how would you like to apply for a director fellowship? So I went to chair. I said, sure, apply for it. Got a director fellowship and for 2 years worked both at the Empty Space and at my own theater, building it up. Third year, left the Empty Space full time at my own theater, the New City Theater. That's where I am now, running that place. So that's kind of my background. So I have been and seen the more traditional arts organizations and the way they operate, and admired the more non-traditional organizations and run my organization in a non-traditional manner. Another thing that I do is I work for the National Endowment for the Arts as an on-site observer. So every year I go out and I travel to about 6 to 10 theaters across the country, meet the artistic director, see the work, talk to them about their theater. So I've been doing that for 4 years, so it's been great. I've been kind of keeping my pulse and seeing what's going on around the country from million-dollar budget theaters to organizations that operate on $60,000 budgets in Madison, Wisconsin. So I've always maintained in my interest in cultural policy and the way theater operates and works in this country nationally is something that I'm very interested in and I think a lot about. And then, more specifically, there are cultural policy changes are evolving here in Seattle. And they were precipitated by the mayor's task force. Government always takes a leadership role in what public money does, where it goes for the arts. Corporations and foundations, private money follows that government lead. Example, Reagan, when he came into power, cut things, the NEA and the state and the city, all these funding agencies, the amount of public funds that went to the arts got slashed. The mayor's task force just a year and a half ago, the mayor says, I think we should investigate and stabilize our major arts organizations. Government takes the lead. The corporate and the foundation sector has followed. So that money that's out there for contributed support to the arts, government takes the lead. So cultural politics, lots is going on right now in Seattle, which will determine how the arts are run and funded in the next 3 to 5 years. How many of you know about this? How many of you are active about it and have a point of view and are advocates? Because right now, things are in change. And the future of your profession and how it operates and your job opportunities are being shaped. You can either sit and let them be shaped by people who are not artists, you see? And by people who really don't know the needs of how the profession should work. Or you can take a point of view, investigate, and begin to think about how should theater, the arts, be supported by public funds in the community I live in and in the country that I live in. And it's happening now in Seattle. And you can make an impact and change things to make it a better artistic cultural community, or you can sit here and not do anything. And what is in motion, which has been put in motion very well-intentioned, and there's lots of good things about it, but a certain structure is being established about where that money goes and the spectrum of possibilities that are open to artists in this community is being determined for the next 3 to 5 years, and it's happening now. And I tell you, one thing that's wrong with all of us as artists in this country, here's one of the differences between American artists and European artists, is there's a greater political sensibility over there because everything is small. And politics and social conditions have a much greater impact on individuals' lives and on artists' lives. So artists have a greater political and social sensibility. They're involved, more involved with cultural policy, how public funds are used for the arts. There's a greater voice. Here in this country, boy, this is a great fucking country. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. But boy, do we have it good. And all of us here, I think, are middle class and very comfortable. So, things just roll along and we don't get involved politically. Artists are not, generally speaking, in this country, have a political consciousness. We're not thinking about our work in terms of what's going on politically, what's going on socially, how our work impacts upon people's daily lives and what goes on in this country. And that's one of the reasons why, and this is me too, it's only the last year that I've started to get my act together a little bit. So it's not like I'm saying different, not like you guys for a long time, but it should change. I got a lot of things to talk about, and I'm not quite sure where to go. I can talk to you about the way the arts work generally in this country, and then I can also talk to you about more specific, I can start from the outside and work in, or I can start from the inside and work out and talk about alternative theater, my particular alternative theater, how it's a response to the more traditional theater structure, and that can then lead into cultural politics if we want to get into it, or we don't get into it.
Could you shape it initially? Could you shape it just a little bit in terms of what your view of the fringe or the alternative theater in Seattle is now?
Right.
Maybe move from there.
Mm-hmm. There is not a great deal of alternative theater in Seattle. And I think alternative theater starts with an artist, whether it's a playwright or it's an actor or it's a designer, and And a creative idea starts in that individual. And then that individual does whatever he or she or they have to do to realize that artistic project. So that artistic project comes from an artist and is motivated, made to happen from some type of passion. There's a real reason, visceral reason that that artist wants to do that work. I think that's your best definition of alternative or fringe theater. The impulse for the work that you see in alternative theater is coming most of the time from that visceral impulse of an artist. And the artists make it happen. Alternative theaters are usually artist-run. The artists make the decision. The actor who's on stage has made the decision. Or the playwright who's there every night seeing the show, because it's his or her show, has made the decision. Or the collective of a couple of actors and the playwright have made the decision to do this work, and they go forward and make it happen. I think that's alternative theater. They do not look to the future in terms of what's our stability. How can we get a stable organization? What's always the priority for the alternative organization or the alternative group of artists is what's our next project? Where are we going to do it? What is it going to be? Let's get to work on it.
Can it be done in this economy? How difficult or easy is it to do it in Seattle?
I think it's always been difficult. It will be difficult for many years to come in Seattle and in this country unless we start getting political and change the way things are structured. And it's always difficult, and those artists and alternative artists, they subsidize the work with their own income. They subsidize. For example, I've been leaning this way over the years, and then I've just had an experience that really kind of crystallized things in that. And there's this theater collective in Milwaukee called Theater X. They've been together for 17 to 19 years. There's four of them. They all act and perform. They're all performers. Two of them are pure actors in a way. One is a playwright and an actor, and the other is an actor and a designer, real design sense. So when lights need to be done and technical things need to be dealt with, John Kischlein does it. When there's playwriting that needs to be done, I mean, the playwright really is John Schneider, who's a wonderful playwrights, gotten Rockefeller Foundation grants, da 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 da. And then the other two women are performing. These four people do everything. So we're collaborating with them on the creation of a new piece. So I was just in Milwaukee, and we were in the first stage of investigation on this piece. And it's total chaos. They're nuts. Outside of the rehearsal hall, their organization is an absolute chaos. They don't really have budgets. They don't really know how much money they have. I mean, it's kind of Looney Tunes. It flipped me out. But you get in the rehearsal hall, and that's because they don't have this organization in which administrators are getting salaries. There isn't enough money for that. What they have is just themselves and artistic work that they want to do, and projects, a project idea that they identify, which they're then going to cultivate over a year and a half. They're going to create it, and they're going to perform it in Milwaukee. Then they're going to tour it in Europe, and then they're going to see if they can perform it in other places in this country. And then while that's happening, the performance is going on, they're thinking viscerally, what's the next project that we want to create? And they create it. These people are in their early 40s. They take home $200 a week. This is when they get the money. They're usually on unemployment 20 weeks out of the year. They've just gotten medical benefits. You know, health and that stuff, like 2 years ago. But their work is first, so they make a tremendous sacrifice. None of them have kids. None of them are married. They make a tremendous sacrifice. And they're, one of the few collectives, there aren't that many, but they're one of the few collectives in the country that has sustained over the years and really is a group of artists that continually work together. And what's always first is an artistic idea, which is visceral. They're doing it for a reason. And then they take the time to let it gestate and to develop it. Process is extended. It's not this 4-3 week rehearsal period. It's over a year that the piece is evolved. First time I saw them, I was just blown away because it was real ensemble acting. The four of these people have been working together for 12 years. So I saw them in this piece for four actors. And it just, real act, it's ensemble work. It's a palpable energy that you feel on stage.
Is the climate in Seattle such that these folks could create that kind of ensemble and survive?
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing that's great about Seattle, and it really, Seattle's unique, is one of the unique cities in the country, I think. Minneapolis is another one. San Francisco is another one. Chicago, I'm not quite sure what's going on in Chicago. I haven't been there. New York. Seattle, there's, you can't do your work without a public. I mean, what you're really doing is to, Kreutz said it, he says, playwriting for him is like thinking out loud in public. Well, you know, a collective or a group of people that create work, it really is. Or even me, when I pick copyrighted scripts that I'm going to direct and mount at my theater, I'm thinking out loud in public. You know, what I present stimulates people, the community that come, intellectually and emotionally. And so that is why I'm doing the work, to generate some idea of community and to get a dialogue going. In Seattle, there is a tremendous, I mean, as small as the city is, there's a large number of people that go to the theater, that enjoy live performance and support it. You can see it by the number of resident organizations that we have. We've got 9 resident theaters. That's extraordinary relative to the other, you know, major cities around the country. So it's a conducive environment. Because of that, there's an audience out there. There are people that go to the theater. We don't have to build an audience. The audience is already there. They come. So I think it's very conducive. It's a great city for that. I think that's really what's missing, is that. That's what we have a healthy artistic community. We don't have a vibrant artistic community. And we have a vibrant artistic community when there's a greater plurality of ideas being presented. And when ideas and passions are being presented, it's stimulating people. It's like getting people upset and mad, some people. You know, it should be that way, because it should be new ideas, challenging old ideas, introducing new ideas.
Okay, can I loop back now to your politics question, and then we'll see the questions later. What can they do, what can we do in terms of the political situation now to improve the distribution of Seattle?
Well, here's the way my perception of it. What we have is a city, a county, a city and the county, they're very supportive of live performance in the community, and they do support it, and they're well-intentioned, and it's pretty great. That's very good. The guidelines for funding, more specifically, let's say in the city, the way it's structured is that it's formula funding. So there's a certain amount of money, okay? And they divide, let's say this, and they divide it into 4 parts, the amount of money that goes to different places. The biggest part of that pie goes to the resident institutions. It goes to organizations that have an operating budget of over $250,000 and have had that operating budget. Is it 250 or 200, Carl, do you know? Okay, that has that operating budget and has sustained a big operating budget for at least, I think, 2 to 3 years. And then it's a formula, okay? The size of your operating budget goes into this formula and you get this money, okay? So for the major institutions, all the major arts organizations in this community, they get this formula funding. So they get a stability of support. Ongoing, every year, they know they're going to get money. They don't have to worry about it. They know they're going to get it. It's stability. Everything else below that, okay? Everything else below that is, every time you go to ask for funds, it's you're evaluating every time. There's no ongoing stability of support, no matter how small it is. So every time you do something, you see, you're not gaining any type of stability, nor is the city recognizing, this group of people, they've been producing one piece every year for the past 3 years. Their budget is only $25,000, but so what? This collective of 4 people, we should let them know that every year they're going to get, through formula funding, they're going to get $2,500. So they know. So then those artists don't feel like, oh, crap, how are we going to get by next year? Are we going to have to do this again? No, it's stability. And you know you've created this collective piece and you've done it, and you know, wow, hell, I'll probably get $2,500 again next year. I don't have to worry about that. You see, you get stability, and you don't have to worry about where you're going to get money to do it. So, so what's now happening on every level in the city, the county, and the state is the full spectrum of performance work, from the individual artist through to the resident institution like the Seattle Rep or the Opera. There should be an understanding that this is a complete ecological system. You can't have one without the other, really, to have a vibrant community. And it's a recognition that it is a complete, that a healthy urban environment should have this complete cultural ecological system. And we need to support the whole system. The arts are generative. It is an organic process, like any other organic process. The small institutions and the individual artists, that's the place where young professionals get their experience and grow artistically and take risks and learn, and then they mature as artists and they want greater, better salaries because they want a more healthy lifestyle, because they want to be professionals like anyone else. They want a good quality of life. The better the quality of the life, the better you can do your work, you know? And so artists should go through this evolutionary cycle. Young artists have stability of outlets for their work. And then as they grow and mature and they stay in the community because they see this stability, they don't travel to New York. They go, why the hell should I go to New York? I can do whatever kind of work I want here. And there's a recognition of a complete system. I can live here and do my work. Holy shit. Why go anywhere? See, that doesn't exist. And so what we don't have here in Seattle is we have artists that are leaving. We don't have generative artists that are staying and creating work. We don't have a lot of alternative theater work. We don't have a lot of alternative groups. We get people who leave because there's no stability. There's no conducive outlet for that work. And that's what's missing. So we have this great structure of resident organizations and big institutions and conventional theater. We've got no underbelly of young artists, generative artists, stimulating work, new ideas, off-the-wall stuff, great stuff, bad stuff, people taking risks, experiments going on. Artists here in the community experimenting formally with theater. Artists here in the community experimenting and responding to contemporary ideas and putting out when was the last time you saw a controversial play? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When was the last time you saw a controversial play? That's not healthy. A vibrant community is there's controversy because it's stimulating thought. It's just like politics. You know, there's a Republican and Democratic Party, so there's an engagement of ideas. And not one. That's right, but isn't that changing politically? Don't you feel the pendulum beginning to sweep? See, it's possibly beginning to sweep. And if you feel like it should sweep, well, get behind the goddamn pendulum and start pushing it yourself and become an advocate. You know, these things that, you know, what happens in small pockets in one place happens, you know, it's chemical reactions all over the country. Critical mass.
John, in your perception of things, how can we help? How can they help change the to form the ecological system?
I think one is you've got to go through the channels as they are, which is you should get the different, and you see imbalances and inequities, then you become involved. They're spending your money and your parents' money. It's public funds. How should it be spent? And how should it be spent on the profession that you are going to step into? See, how should it be shaped? So you should get involved in that, and then you should go, you know, you should become an advocate. And then on the artistic side, do your work. Don't think, actors. Ooh, boy, I want to get a job at Seattle Rep. I got a whole nother point of view. It's something I got to tell you about that. Go out and do the work yourself.
Okay. I don't think John needs a moderator, so if you have questions, you ask.
Yes. Talk about a political point of view that you think is necessary for artists in the community to have, and a visceral spark for the artistic work. Are they separate, or do they inform one another?
They inform one another. I think it's one and the same.
The university is also public-funded money, and I'm wondering if you see roles, or what you see ideally as the role that the university itself could play in the in the public sphere, and also, I mean, this university, this program seems to me actively discourages alternative theater. What we do have connections to, if any, is to the Rep. Why, this is the second question, why not have connections to New City Theater? It seems to me like the university could benefit from what you guys are doing, and you could greatly benefit by having stronger connections with folks here.
You know, I agree with that completely. I don't really know. I don't know enough about the generic categories of educational institutions within a community. You know, I don't know about it. I'm ignorant of it. I've never investigated or been involved in it and that connection. I do know that there's a problem there, in that it seems, generally speaking, that the academic institutions, and I don't think it's only in this, in Seattle, but there's a gap, you know, this between an integration between the academic institution and the professional community, you know, the full range of it.
Do you have any ideas to how to bridge the gap?
Well, no, not really. I mean, I can, you know, tell you quite honestly, and I don't just want to talk off the top of my head because I think it's a very serious question. Quite frankly, my bigger concern and my thought and all my energy is really into how the public perceives the arts, how the government perceives the arts in this community, people, specific people, and spending my energies and thinking about it and writing about it and communicating and, you know, and that. So I really haven't thought about it or made efforts to integrate it because I feel like that's secondary, that's the next step, you know. Yeah, well, the city, all of the government funding agencies do their work on an annual schedule. So it's on an annual schedule that the government, you know, I mean the state's a biennium, you know, 2 years they vote. They're doing that now. I mean, it's kind of been done. Just needs the governor's signature. And a budget is approved, and a certain amount of money is allocated to the Arts Commission, public money. And then the Arts Commission usually goes through on an annual basis a review of their guidelines and their structure for disbursement of those funds. And then they have formal application periods.
Do we have a forum while we're doing that review process?
Yes, you see, it's a public agency, so they have commission meetings, and those commission meetings are open to the public. If you want to speak to the Seattle Arts Commission at their next meeting, all you do is you're a member of the public. You can write a letter and you can get 5 minutes. I got a 15-minute presentation at their next meeting to the full commission. I can't wait. I'm going in with charts. I'm going in with the whole shebang, man.
Well,
you're not up at SEDS, right?
Right.
What's your operating budget for next year?
We're at 150,000 now. Our percentage of contributed income to earned income is about 70-30. For Theater Communications Group started their financial studies of the national scene in the early 70s, and their first report after a number of years to accumulate came out, I think it was the first report, came out in 1980. And the general statement was, the smaller the organization, the greater the dependency on contributed income. The larger the organization, the more the earned income they get. So you look at the like the Rep, they get lots of money all over the place, but I think it's like 80-20. And 80% is earned income and 20% is contributed. The smaller the organization, the less seats there are in the house, the less your ticket income, it's even possible. And so to survive, and to try and pay people some kind of wage, you know, there's a greater dependency on contributed income.
As a follow-up question, I noticed that you were doing more outside sponsored events, like concerts and things like that.
Yeah.
Are you looking more towards bringing in more income as a support group?
No, that doesn't make us any money.
Yeah, that goes back to my idea of theater, of the kind of theater that I wanted to run and present in this community, which was I did not want a six-show subscription building that did copyrighted scripts. I didn't want that. What I wanted was a theater that was really a building that was more like an arts center, and that presented contemporary work, and presented contemporary work from important contemporary American writers that were already written, that provided an outlet for generative artists that were living in Seattle but didn't have a building or a home or a place to generate their work. And so I'd always try and find two or three individual artists or groups or companies and form an association and say, look, you're in residence, you can produce once or twice during the year here, and we'll do something like, we'll take our publicity expenses off the top, and then we'll go 50-50 with whatever income we get at the door. There's no potential for me to make money on that. And then I always wanted to have to present an experimental company from outside the region to cultivate interstate and national ties with contemporary groups, and then present eclectic things like cabaret. Like right now, there's a jazz series going on. It's the first jazz series in this community that someone has put together for Northwest jazz artists and jazz musicians. We get $65 a night. You know, I mean, we don't. You know, it doesn't pay for the lights almost. But this is what I want to do, which is I want to produce and I want to present, and across the spectrum of contemporary work, and I want to provide an outlet for generative artists that are living in this community to present new works, premier works. So that's kind of what we do.
We got time for one more question.
What's ahead for New City? In the immediate future, with summer, etc.
In the immediate future, we tried to become, I slipped, and I tried to announce 8 shows in a full year. I got influenced by the wrong influences. And I tried to announce it as a subscription. And it was so stupid. And we got tremendously burned. And it's wrong. I would have to start compromising artistically and doing plays that I think will get an audience if I'm going to go that route. Quite frankly, I'm not interested in compromising. If I'm going to do that, I'll leave this place and I'll go to a theater that's already compromised. You know what I mean? And I'll get a salary and it won't be my headache. So I've reorganized, and I'm right now in a period of doing that, of not rushing ahead, but rethinking what I want to do, and returning to programming 3 or 4 months at a time, and that's it. So all I do is look now, and I'm thinking about August, September, October, November, December, lining that up, at the same time beginning to engage in discussion with people and ideas for the second half of the year, but come September, October, then I'll be lining up the next, you know, from January to December. So we'll still do the same thing, but we're back to an alternative organization, which I can't tell you too far about our future because I don't have the support or the stability to tell you about my future, and I'd be a fool to do so. So the only way I can stabilize in this country and the city, stabilize my future, is by compromising artistically and doing more popular plays, not responding viscerally and intellectually, but beginning to think, well, what's going to be my ticket income here? I need to, you know, do this, and starting to slide. I did start to slide, and I wrote away the rights for some of these plays, and now the rights are coming in. My headset has changed, and I've got like this play by Charles Mouse, which is kind of loony, and it would fit for us, and it's Sherlock's last case, and, you know, people will come in every day, but, you know, I look at it, and I go, why do I want to do this? And there's no reason I want to do this, except I think it can make money. Fuck that.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Do you really see your theater as a training ground for artists to learn how to work with a rep? Or was that kind of a joke?
Oh, no. If I said that or implied that, no, that's not it at all.